The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Recently, a buzz went around the office where everybody was talking about Rafi Khachaturian's iPod for some reason. And the thing I wanted to know is, who uses an iPod?
I'm Nick Troutwine. I'm a senior editor at The New Yorker. And one of the writers I work with here is Rafi Khachaturian. And Rafi's most recent reporting trip took him to Lagos, Nigeria. I stopped in his office the other night to see how he's doing. And when I opened the office door, he gave me an incredible stricken look. And he held up a little device that looked an awful lot like an iPhone.
Just before this trip, I went to the Apple store and I bought an iPod Touch.
Rafi had returned from the trip with hours and hours of video and audio, a real treasure trove of
gigabytes worth of data on this device.
It happened that he'd come back, set the device aside for a few weeks, and turned to another story. He filed the draft to me, picked up the iPod, and he found that he had forgotten the passcode.
So the passcode to my phone is 2668. And so I altered the passcode by one number. So when I picked it up cold, for the first couple of tries, maybe two or three tries, I absentmindedly put in my phone's code, which was certainly not it. And I thought, oh, what am I doing? It's one digit off. And I did one or two digits of that and one or two digits of this. And then next thing you knew, I was at six tries. And at that point, I kind of slowed down a little. But I should have stopped, really. Talk to Apple support now.
So I come into Rafi's office. And Rafi is hunched in his desk chair.
Oh, let's try chat.
With a look that it's somewhere between my team lost the World Cup and a meteor destroyed my house.
I have a password issue. Can you help with that? And I am on my eighth try. Okay, let's see what Brian has to say. Never fun when your advisor begins his response with, yikes. It will stop allowing you to try after 10. I see. So if I did it 8 times, I have only 2 chance. I can't even talk anymore.
Rafi picked up the iPod and said, take this with you, or I'm going to stare at it all night and not be able to sleep.
It's worse than that. I was worried that I would have some impulsive, like, vision of, like, it's this, and I would use one of my remaining tries. So I didn't want to even have that in my hand.
And I put it in a safe place on my desk and went home for the night.
I mean, I woke up the next day and I felt that something had been stolen from me. I guess that thing that was taken is this kind of thing that we increasingly do with our devices. We put part of our thinking, of our memories, of our recollections into them. And of course, I couldn't access it, not unlike the difficulty I was having accessing the code from the own labyrinth of my own memory. I went to go see Henry Finder.
I'm the editorial director at The New Yorker magazine.
He's like one of the smartest guys that, like, not only that one could know, like one could imagine. You know, the first thing that he said was, what we do as writers here is deal with uncertainty all the time. And this is just only part of that continuum. And then he went and quoted almost verbatim
an exchange between John Stuart Mill and Thomas Carlyle. The story is that Thomas Carlyle, great British, Scottish, I should say, writer, critic, and historian, had completed the first volume of his magisterial history of the French Revolution. And he entrusted it to the great thinker and writer John Stuart Mill, seeking his notes. Apparently, Mill left it in the vicinity of a fireplace, and his charlady used it to fuel the fire.
John Stuart Mill went to apologize. And then when he left, Carlyle felt that he had to comfort his friend.
He wrote this letter to Mill.
And the part that Henry had recited almost verbatim is,
"My dear Mill, you left me last night with a look which I shall not soon forget.
That I can never write that volume again is indubitable. Singular enough, the whole earth could not get it back.
But only a better or a worse one. There is the strangest dimness over it, a figure thrown into the melting pot. But the metal is there. The model also is in my head."
In other words, it's still in here. And after that, Henry suggested then that I try and find a data recovery company.
Wow. Well, let me say a couple of things.
Okay. Jim McGaugh is a neurobiologist at UC Irvine who specializes in memory.
First of all, it's obvious to all of us that we forget.
And by the time I called him, I was beginning to suspect that the passcode was not just any variation of the one in my phone, but that it was based on my daughter's name. I don't know why I hadn't thought of it before. The only problem was I wasn't sure I could trust my memory at all by that point.
So why do we forget? Well, first of all, we forget just because with the passage of time, something happens that we don't understand that makes memory grow weaker. But the ability to retrieve information that we have is influenced by things that we had already learned before, and that's competing, or things that we learned afterwards that compete.
Is it reasonable to think that the number is in there somewhere in my brain?
Yes.
So really what we're talking about is a question of access. Can I get it?
It's a question of retrieval. You had used this many times in Africa.
Yes.
So what is it that causes this well-rehearsed sequence not now to be remembered? Did you write it down? Did you look at it?
I never wrote it down. I was very confident at the time that I would never forget it.
Well, you used it a lot, so the odds are that that sequence is there, and it will pop into your head. If you had 10 tries, you would get it, but you've only got two left.
Two left. What are the conditions that make a particular memory accessible?
Well, context is very important.
So I'm sitting here right now, dressed in an outfit that has only been configured once before, and that's while I was in Nigeria. I was this morning rereading passages of a novel that I had taken with me. Just the act of doing that was making me think of other things in Nigeria, other flashes of other memories.
So Rafi, you've reached into the back of your mind and you have arrived at a number you feel reasonably confident about.
So that number is sort of based on my daughter's name.
I will say that you came into my office more confident about 2685.
I feel really good about 2685. It triggers some memory that when we were in a sawmill in Nigeria, it's in the middle of Lagos. And this is one of the most impoverished places I've ever been to. There's some little faint thread of a memory where I was putting the passcode in and thinking of my daughter's name being entered at that particular place and thinking about the peculiarity of that. Like, who would have thought that that would happen?
So we have two attempts left. Today we're going to do one of them.
I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it because I am not going to put my jittery hands on that thing and accidentally press the wrong button.
All right. I have in front of me Rafi's iPod Touch. I have a piece of paper with the code written on it.
I don't know if I can watch.
So slide to unlock. I'm sliding to unlock. Enter passcode. iPod Touch requires your passcode after restarting. No kidding. Here we go. 2, 6, 8, 5.
Woo! It's open!
Oh my God.
It works.
Ralph, you did it. Fantastic.
That is a really big relief.
The New Yorker's Rafi Khachdourian in a moment of salvation with his editor, Nicholas Troutwine.
Here's an evangelical church where there are a million people.